The Inner Voice Show is a dialogue between the host and the listeners about their relationships. This show is not an attempt to assess, diagnose, or treat any mental health or illness condition. Please consult your physician, psychiatrist, or psychotherapist for personal matters.
Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain and have Sean in studio. Now, this is a show about what matters most in life, about our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. Now, in this show, I'll bring you the latest research about the amount of money you need to be happy. Yes, I'll definitely tell you. It's the latest research. And then we'll talk to Elaine Grace O'Brien, author of The Jewel of Abundance. Then I will have Mandy Fazeli, the founder of The More Balanced World, tell us about their foundation and what their foundation is up to for the homeless children of California. So you can call us also in the studio, 951-922-3532. You can talk to me, ask questions about anything that we're talking about here, or talk to our guests. We'd love to hear from you. This is a call-in show, 951-922-3532. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back to tell you how much money actually you need to be happy.
Dr. Fujian Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fujian has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fujian.com. That's www.fujian.com.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
So about half of American adults lived in middle-income household in 2016, according to the new Pew Research Center analysis. So the analysis is new, but they went back for 2 years to see, and it does not appear necessarily that it has changed much, of government data. This is the government data. Now, in percentage terms, 52% of adults lived in middle-income households, 29% in lower-income, and 19% in upper-income households. Now, in 2016, the median household income was $59,000. This is according to U.S. Census Bureau. Now, executive CEOs, business entrepreneurs are considered part of the upper class strictly because of their economic achievements. And doctors, lawyers, economists can also be considered wealthy as long as their income exceeds $200,000. Now, low income is considered $22,000 and less. So you can probably find yourself somewhere there. However, it also depends on the state you live and where the location is. Because in it said that in northern California, the actually lower middle class was starting at $117,000. So of course you can see, depending on where you are and what state, the lower income and middle income and higher income might be different for you. But still, you know where you stand. This is the amount of money you need to be happy, according to a research. Now, money really can buy you happiness, as it turns out, only by this research. Everybody does not agree with that. But you might not need to, as you might not need as much as you think. So yes, a certain amount of money is definitely going to make you happy, but not just over and over and over indulgence of money. A large analysis published in the journal Nature Human Behavior used data from Gallup World Poll, a survey of more than 1.7 million people from 164 countries, to put a price on optimal emotional well-being. Between $60,000 and $75,000 a year. There you go. That's all you need. That aligns with past research on the topic, which found that people are happiest when they make about $75,000 a year. But while that may be the sweet spot for feeling positive emotions on a day-to-day basis, the researchers found that a higher figure of $95,000 is ideal for life evaluation, which takes into account long-term goals, peer comparisons, and other macro-level metrics. So the researchers from Purdue University also found that it may be possible to make too much money as far as happiness is concerned. They observed declines in emotional well-being and life satisfaction after 95,000 mark. Okay, perhaps because being wealthy past the point required for daily comfort and purchasing power, at least, can lead to unhealthy social comparison and unfulfilling material pursuits. So up to a point, you feel achievement and you feel great. Beyond that, it seems like if you're going to put yourself into a whole different group, that group of peers and social group, you will probably be the less than on the next scale. So then you're going to compare yourself again, which is going to create misery. Still, the findings don't mean that getting a huge raise won't lead to individual satisfaction. It simply suggests, according to the researchers, that a group of people making $200,000 a year is likely no happier than a group of people making $95,000. The well-documented hedonist treadmill phenomenon also suggests that people adjust relatively quickly to their newly flush bank accounts, with happiness leveling back off over time. In the new study, the researchers note that their estimates pertain specifically to individuals and ideal household income is likely higher. Plus, while the figures in the paper represent global estimates, earning satisfaction also varies widely around the world and in urban versus rural areas within countries. So certain regions, Western Europe, North America, Australia, New Zealand, East Asia, and Middle East, have higher financial thresholds for both emotional well-being and life evaluation, while areas including Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, Latin America, and Sub-Saharan Africa were lower than the global numbers. All told, the ideal income for their evaluation ranged from $35,000 in Latin America to $125,000 in Australia and New Zealand. In North America, the optimal amount for life evaluation was estimated at $105,000 a year, and the range for emotional well-being was $65,000 to $95,000, so that's just it. The researchers didn't observe significant differences between men and women, but they did find that education level influenced monetary ideals. So highly educated people tended to have loftier income satisfaction points, likely because they had higher expectations of wealth and were more susceptible to social comparisons. All said, if your income is below or above the researcher's ideal threshold, don't despair. Research suggests that while money can buy you happiness, the quality of your spending is just as important as the quantity. So now you know when to get happy and how much to make to be happy. Take good care of yourself with the money aspect. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Ellen Grace O'Brien, and she's going to actually talk about abundance, prosperity, and wealth in her book.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Don't miss out on the free KMET smartphone apps. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zain. You can get it now at Fujian.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Welcome, everyone. We're back. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have the honor of talking to Ellen Grace O'Brien. She's the author of The Jewel of Abundance. She's a yogacharya, an esteemed yoga teacher, a radio host, and an award-winning poet who weaves poetry into her teachings on spiritual matters, pointing to the mystical experiences beyond words and thought. Ordained by a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, she has been teaching Kriya Yoga philosophy and practice nationally and internationally for over three decades. She's the spiritual director of the Center for Spiritual Enlightenment in San Jose, California. You can visit her online in www.ellengraceobrien.com. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to my show.
Hi, Dr. Fujian. It's really a delight to be with you today.
So tell me a little bit about Kriya Yoga first, before we jump in and go through your wonderful book, The Jewel of Abundance.
Well, thanks for asking about Kriya Yoga. Kriya is a generic term, but Kriya Yoga in the tradition that I represent is the yoga that was brought to the United States from India by the great yogi Paramahansa Yogananda. Many people are familiar with him because of his very famous book millions of people have read called The Autobiography of a Yogi. So while most people think of yoga in the West, anyway, as asana or physical exercise, Kriya Yoga is more about the yoga philosophy that has to do with living a spiritual life, living a balanced life, learning how to meditate, how to clear your mind, like that. So how to wake up to the truth that we're spiritual beings living a spiritual existence. So Kriya Yoga is that. It's really a very practical path, and it's about living your whole life as a spiritual life.
So when you talk about enlightenment, and you have, you're a director of the Spiritual Enlightenment Center, give us what enlightenment means, because I think people have a different idea, and some people have such a high level of idea about enlightenment is as if it's a never reachable concept. So tell us a little bit about what you mean by enlightenment.
What I mean by enlightenment is as it is seen in the tradition of Kriya Yoga, which is waking up to the truth of our being, that we are spiritual beings. In other words, you know, we could put it this way, you know, people think, of themselves as a spiritual being. They might think, I have a soul, right? But enlightenment is waking up to the truth that you are the soul. You know, you are that which you are speaking. That absolute reality is what you are. That spiritual essence is the truth of your being. And enlightenment is knowing that, it's realizing it, and then importantly, it's living that. So it's not just, you know, going off to a cave somewhere and having the aha experience, but it's right in the world every day, being awake to the truth of our being and living in a way that is consistent with that. So that's why I talk about engaged enlightenment. And you're right, you know, a lot of people think of enlightenment as being for somebody else some other time. And that's the primary obstacle that we have to waking up.
Exactly. Now, you brought all of this concept of yoga and enlightenment to the concept of abundance and wealth. And that's where your book, The Jewel of Abundance, Finding Prosperity Through the Ancient Wisdom of Yoga. Now, it's interesting because in most of people's mind, yoga, spirituality, it's more for simple life and simplicity. It's really not about, you know, accumulation of wealth. And I remember even when we had in Utah, we had Osho with its center with all of the wealth. And there was a lot of conversation about how come there's so much wealth there. And somehow most people don't bring wealth and spirituality together. And in this book, you bring the concept of wealth completely from a different space, not from only of what you have and your havings, but from who you are being, from the space of abundance. So tell us how you went from, how you've attached these concepts together.
Yeah, so that's such a good question. And, you know, the book is drawn really from ancient teachings in the Vedas, from which yoga, you know, that's the root of yoga. And in there, we find these universal teachings that are appropriate for anyone, really, regardless of what your religious background or spiritual tradition is. They're about how to live a conscious, fulfilled, and serviceful life. So those goals are, one, to live a dharmic life, which means a life of higher purpose. And two, to thrive and to prosper. That's the second goal. But here, we have to understand that thriving and prospering is meant to serve your higher purpose. It's not for its own sake. And I think that's where the problem comes in. You know, Dr. Fujian, when we look at any spiritual traditions, we can find generally you know, scriptures that say, oh, you know, abundance, wealth, money, it's a problem, right? We can find that, but then we can also find teachings that say you need it. You know, you need it in order to do the good work that you're here to do. So it's not about acquisition. It's not about greed, but it's about what do you need to have? What do you need to be able to attract? What kind of resources are needed in order to do the service that you're here to provide? That's the main idea.
Definitely. Now, I have read something beautiful into an introduction. I wanted to read it for people. It's like, we are born to thrive. If we look, we can see this. Everything in nature, including us, is geared toward the growth and fulfillment of its purpose. So the inclination to thrive, prosper, and fulfill, as you said, our potential is natural impulses of divine capacity as spiritual beings. So you talk about prospering, you thriving, and creating a fulfilled life based on the way you are and the way that you can be. Now, you talk more about four goals that yoga has, right? Can you tell us about the goals?
Yes, thank you. I started and then I realized I didn't say the other two goals. So the first goal is called Dharma, which means to live with higher purpose and to make our contribution to life, to do what we, you know, every person has a unique destiny, a unique gift to offer in service of the greater good. So Dharma is about purpose that is a higher purpose that has to do with the well-being of all. So that's the first goal. Second is called Artha, which is the subject of this book, which is about how to thrive and to prosper so we can do that good work, do what we've come here to do. Third goal, which is often completely surprising to people, is that we're here to enjoy life. So
I vote for that.
I always ask people to applaud when we get to that because, you know, especially as far as spiritual or religious teachings go, people don't expect that a goal is that you should enjoy life. But when we think about it, it makes perfect sense. You know, who's going to meditate or who's going to do, you know, good things in life if they don't find some deeper enjoyment in that? Mm-hmm. And you know, even I know you do a lot with research, and a lot of the studies show that really what makes us the happiest is when we can serve others, when we can do something for other people. So that goal to enjoy life is a deep goal, and it's an important goal. And then the fourth goal is called moksha, and that is to find freedom in this lifetime. And that is freedom from having to be a reactive person, right? You know, freedom to respond, freedom to see clearly, and ultimately spiritual freedom of knowing the truth of our being. So there we have enlightenment again, or what is called liberation of consciousness.
So part of what I understand is from a biological perspective, we come in to take care of ourselves, handle our own well-being of being able to survive, and then create offsprings and be able to provide in abundance and prosperity for our offspring and our family systems. And in from a spiritual space, the higher purpose takes on a little bit bigger goal than this. It takes on a little bit more of the community or humanity or earth or all of it. Somehow it's way beyond yourself, where after you're grown up and have created what you need to create for yourself, being responsible and accountable for yourself and your offspring and your family, then if that was the only purpose, you're done. I mean, there's no more purpose. And therefore, it's like, you know, you're here to create more because now you have the ability to create more. And you've always had the ability to create more and to be there for more than versus just kind of limiting yourself for the small space of just my body and what my needs are with the roof on top of my head and what I can eat. What else would you consider as you're considering a higher purpose?
Well, you know, it's different for every person, and that's the beauty of it. But there is that generic theme, you know, that you have just been talking about, that when we're serving a higher purpose, we're serving something beyond our individual self and what we might call our selfish aims, you know, that it is for I, me, and mine. So higher purpose is beyond that. And I also have a chapter in the book about generativity, which is an important topic today. So this idea of spiritual prosperity, or what we would call dharmic prosperity, can often take us into what is called generativity, which is doing something that we don't necessarily even see the results of, you know, that are going to benefit future generations. So, you know, we can think of it that way too. And there's lots of subtle pieces in this teaching, aspects of it. For example, you know, we don't do it in order to find personal satisfaction. We don't do it because we're attached to a particular outcome. We do it because we are moved to do the right thing, or to do something that our own creative self, our own soul, our own heart cares deeply about.
I read something which was beautiful in this book and your concept about the prosperity and abundance coming from a non-stealing conversation. Now, I had never heard of it that way, never seen it that way. And I was just like, wow, that is an amazing context to come from. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah, thank
it's like
you.
That's utmost level of integrity to the core.
Absolutely. And it really is the principle in yoga. It's the principle on which true prosperity rests, which is non-stealing. And this teaching comes from a text that is called the Yoga Sutra. It's a basic text for those who want to study classical yoga philosophy. And basically, it says that once a person is established in non-stealing, and established in non-stealing means that you no longer have, you don't have any behaviors that are taking from others, but you also don't think in that way. Being established in non-stealing, you don't think that way. A person who is established in that consciousness of non-stealing, for that person, all the jewels of abundance appear. So it's a metaphysical principle, really, and it's about the change in our consciousness from lack to abundance. So if you think about it, the only time we steal or have any thoughts or behaviors that are related to taking something that doesn't belong to us or something we don't own by right of consciousness or, you know, like that, or we want to cheat because we're thinking about how to get something, right? The only reason that we ever do anything like that is because we're afraid and we think we don't have enough. Yes. There's a sense of lack in there. So really, this principle is telling us that we have to remove from our own mind, from our own hearts, this idea of lack, and instead learn how to tune into our own infinite divine potential and begin coming from a consciousness of abundance, a consciousness of wealth, a consciousness of wholeness, and then beginning to attract the resources that we need, the people we need to connect with. So it really comes down to a change in our consciousness, in our mind.
As you said that, and I had read this, it's interesting because obviously I see a lot of clients. I'm a therapist, so I see a lot of clients, and a lot of high anxiety and high stress that comes in to many of my clients are related to money. And it's irrelevant of how much money. This is completely irrelevant. They could be multimillionaire and still have that type of an anxiety and the concept of lack that we were talking about, and still having the idea of the conversation of stealing, not that anybody directly steals. And this is what I wanted, if we could open it, because as I was reading, because most people think of stealing as if it's an outright theft. Like, I've actually went into your account, or I went and, you know, into your purse or home and stole something.
Right. Or shoplifting.
And that is really not what you were talking about. It's the idea of what is mine that I know is mine and what is not mine. Not because I'm angry at the banking system or at the big company systems and all governments and all of this. And then, you know, therefore I'll try to take what I think it's mine and, you know, in a backhanded way. That's still the conversation of you're having a stealing context, because in reality, those boundaries are very clear that what is mine and what isn't. And unless everybody agrees that that's mine, if there's somebody that has an agreement that's not mine, then it isn't. So being in that level of complete integrity brings so much peace to a person, which again is irrelevant of the dollar amount of how much of income person has or equity they have or, you know, assets they have. It's the wealth and abundance of their inner peace that comes with that type of a non-stealing mentality.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to describe it. It's true. There is an inner peace that comes because when we're not, in a sense, you know, if we're involved in some kind of cheating, which would be, you know, that kind of stealing when you're taking from someone else, This teaching is also very subtle. It even comes down to taking credit, you know, for something that's not yours. Or if we look at it even very broadly and deeply, we can say it's also about taking from future generations. So that might have to do with taking on, you know, more than like wasting. you know, taking on more resources than we can use or appreciate. So this teaching is not austere in the sense that you have to live a life that is uncomfortably simple. It's not that at all. It's about conscious living. So having what you need makes perfect sense. Having more than we need, more than we appreciate, more than we can use, and not sharing the resources that we have, that's all considered stealing in this philosophical view. And so if we're looking at how we can prosper in the sense of having a more complete fulfillment, we begin to explore how we use the resources that we have. It's a very profound teaching. And as you say, it's a pathway to peace, really.
Yes. So let's now talk about abundance and prosperity. And what do you suggest in your book for the readers to gain in opening up that path of abundance and prosperity for themselves?
Well, there's many tools that I offer in the book, but the one that I consider primary is learning how to meditate. Now, people might say, well, wait a minute, you know, wealth, abundance, that seems about money to me. And what does meditation have to do with that? Right. So, but it's really about, you know, being able to quiet the mind, you know, so we're not just always in that discursive mind. We're not caught up in worry or fear, like you said, you experience with many of your clients. That doesn't help us connect with the resources that we need. So first and foremost, we need to learn how to quiet the mind. And meditation is the best tool we have for that. And meditation is also the best tool for discovering and experiencing the spiritual truth of our being, which is really our greatest wealth. You know, the mind changes all the time, the body changes, but our spiritual essence is what remains the same. So when we connect with that, we can experience our own wholeness, and that becomes the place from which we then reach out into life and do the things that we're inspired to do.
I've had personal experience and with my clients where I had a lot of anxiety growing up. I came to US when I was 12 and a half alone, and I worked like three jobs since I was about 16, and put myself through school, you know, through graduate school and everything. So the concept of anxiety about money was always there because I had to do it all by myself, and I felt like I had nobody else to lean on. So it's interesting, though, Ellen, that it was a frame of mind. It was no longer about having, you know, the minimum to take care of myself or even creating something that I liked beyond the minimum. It had to do a lot with a frame of mind, where that when the frame of mind changed from the anxiety to the concept of abundance and prosperity, it changed me.
Yeah.
Because the havings, my goals, my creations out there were still similar, whether I was anxious or not. It just made me a much nicer person.
Yes, it totally does. And then I think, you know, that's part of our abundance, really.
Yeah.
That really is part of our abundance. And there's also, in terms of the spiritual perspective about abundance, of course, is making that shift to understanding that there's actually a way that we can experience and feel and know that we are in a cooperative relationship with the universe itself.
Yes.
So we are not, you know, just this little, the ego, you know, out there just trying our best to, you know, make it happen. That's exhausting.
Yeah.
So, you know, this spiritual perspective has a shift to learning how to have a cooperative relationship with the universe, which, you know, as you noted in the book from the beginning of what you read, there's an energy, there's a power, there's a presence in the universe that wants everything and everyone to prosper.
Right.
You know, you can observe it if you look. So we want to learn how to line ourselves up with that.
Yes. And it's the truth. If the other one is really a lie, none of us are alone. None of us make it alone. Every one of us make it with other people. And the sources and resources and the abundance that other people give us, all the steps that other people put in front of us, whether they're our family members or people who come in as mentors, these are resources. These are the people, these are the energies, these are souls, these are beings that create that for us as we grow up. And then how we can also give that back and give that back to the next generation is the cooperative space of we're not doing it alone. So let's stop pretending that we are, and let's give it a lot of credit to everyone who's been there in our life. So thank you so much for writing this book. Thank you for all that you do. Thank you for coming to my show. And for everyone, go the Jewel of Abundance and go to her website, ellengraceobrien.com. And they can also get it in Amazon, right?
Yes, it's available. And actually, yesterday was the first day, so it's available now. And it's really nice to be doing your show right in the beginning launch week of this book. So thank you so much. It's really been a delight to be with you.
Beautiful. And people can also find you on the website, right, if they wanted to connect with you in San Jose, California, or via phone, or just get to know you, right?
Absolutely. Yes. And Beautiful. Thank you so much again. And thank you for the great work that you're doing.
Thank you. And don't go anywhere, everyone. We're going to be with Mandy Fazeli. She's the founder and president of, I forgot her name, but I'll give it to you in a minute. Oh, A More Balanced World. A More Balanced World. She is doing amazing work with the homeless children of California. So come back, okay?
Bye.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan. Dr. Fushan has a direct approach to getting you to free your mind. Inner Voice is a live call-in show where you can chat about your life and all that matters to you in your relationships. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fushan, Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk, KMET, 1490 AM, and on the Internet Stream.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
Check us out online at KMET1490AM.com.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fushan Zain. You can get it now at Fushan.com or Amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Dr. Fushan Zain is a psychotherapist, a marriage and family therapist, and a life coach with more than 27 years of experience. She is the author of the Awareness Integration Model, which has been researched and published in numerous international journals. Dr. Fushan has offices in Beverly Hills, Irvine, and Woodland Hills, California, and also consults online and by telephone. Make an appointment with her today by calling 818-648-2140 or go online to www.fushan.com. That's www.fushan.com.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fushan Zain, and I am so excited to speak with Mandy Fazeli. She is a great friend. I am so honored to just to be her friend. She's an amazing woman. She's a founder and president with a lifelong passion for community service and social volunteerism. both foreign and domestic, and with the help of many friends who share her passion, Mandy Fazeli, an IT professional with Farmers Insurance Group, founded A More Balanced World in 2010. As a founder and president, Mandy uses her management skills, international background, and humanitarian aspiration to help give the hope of education to youth around the world. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you, Dr. Zane. Thank you for having me on your show. I truly appreciate the opportunity to reach your listeners and take our message to them. These opportunities are priceless for organizations like ours. You know that already, where its livelihood depends on reaching out to more and more people and drawing on their kindness and caring about balance and justice in life.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about A More Balanced World, and then we're going to talk about the annual gathering, and then more than anything, talk about your new program for the homeless children.
Of course. We named this organization A More Balanced World, and admittedly, there are many dimensions to having or creating or working towards a more balanced world that are all interrelated. We decided to start with one such dimension, being education, which in our belief is the key to self-sufficiency and human dignity. And it's a basic human right, really, not a privilege. It's an opportunity we believe every child and young adult should have, regardless of the social and economic status of their parents or where they were born, what race they are from, what ethnic background or gender. But according to UNESCO, 263 million children and youth in the world are not in school, and of course, most of them are girls. So we see ourselves in the business of leveling the playing field when and where we can.
And you started from internationally, from different population in the world, actually. And now recently you're coming local to Los Angeles.
Yes. From day one, actually back a little more than 8 years ago in the fall of 2010, when we started this, one of the core beliefs was that I myself see myself a little bit of a global village citizen, and I really don't think that it matters where the child was born. So we started this as a global organization, and it actually started in Ethiopia with one child back in 2010. Currently, we are supporting, providing educational support, financial support for education to children and young adults in about 12 countries. But for our U.S. project, we decided on focusing or narrowing our focus on homeless, not children, college education, college students,
or young adults, teenagers, and young adults, right?
Exactly. So that's really what we are focusing. Towards that, we are working with the city of Los Angeles. First of all, let me just tell your the listeners about a couple of statistics that are shocking. And every place I repeat that, people are looking at me like it can't be true. There are, and these are 2016 statistics, there are 1.3 million homeless students, kindergarten through 12th grade in the United States. In California, and that doesn't include the college students, in California, where we are focusing, 1 out of 9 California State University students is homeless. And wow. In the city of Los Angeles, I believe there are 11 community colleges. 1 in 5 is homeless. So these numbers sound unreal when you know that a person, a young person, goes to school, sits in their college classes, and then they might be hungry at the time, and afterwards they don't have a place to go to. So we thought that they should take the priority, helping them should take priority, and we are in the process of opening a center, we call it outreach center and referral center, in partnership with City of Los Angeles, where we can provide basic physical needs, such as, you know, food and clothing and hygiene products, things of that nature, and emotional and mental services, health services, and academic assistance, and most importantly, referrals, medical, dental service referrals, shelter referrals, and so on and so forth. And that's really what we are shooting for, to open the first quarter of 2019.
Beautiful. And I know, Mandy, one of the most important aspects of your organization and the reason that around the world you decided, and you and other members of the organization made a decision to really focus on education and supporting the children and young adults to continue their education is because the understanding that coming out of homelessness really depends on educating yourself and having abilities, having skills to create wealth for yourself, to create independence for yourself, to create something where you're not going to be ill, you're not going to be a burden for yourself and the society, and you're not going to be traumatized every day out there. So when you have the ability to get educated and gain skills, that's when the whole concept will rise, and that's why you concentrated on education, right?
Right. Exactly. So we all know there is an imbalance in educational possibilities between the, you know, the disadvantaged and people of means. So or the privileged. So, and we really see this as the key to self-sufficiency, and for that population, for the disadvantaged, to get themselves out of this cycle of poverty. And for that, on the other hand, we already know that there are a lot of people of means who would like to help. And we see our work as simply drawing the link between these two groups and connecting them. And that's what I meant by leveling playing field when we can. Of course, you know, there is a lot of need out there. We are, at this point, a very small organization, but I have learned that the focus should never be on all those people that we cannot help, but only the ones that we can, and expand on that.
And you're an organization that, although has been small, but the level of reach has been global, and you really look at who to help, and everyone in your organization is a volunteer, including you, and you've really put a lot of love and care into your work. And it's really beautiful to have watched you throughout these years in the way that you have created just resources and love and caring for people around the world. I know that we have had people who have come to you in different countries, in Malaysia, Turkey, Iran, all of these places where you generously, you and your group have generously have defined exactly what the student needed, and you have provided for them. And because of your organization, they have been able to go from one level to the next and be able to continue their education. A More Balanced World annual gathering is going to happen December 8th. Sunday, December 8th. It's 5 o'clock in Moss Theater, which is in Olympic Boulevard in Santa Monica, 3131 Olympic Boulevard, Santa Monica, California. And you're more than welcome to join the group, which would be amazing if you can. They have a music band, Touch of Jazz. They have Dr. Fareema Shahrawaz, which is a beautiful voice. Ziba Shirazi, the poet, Ali, and Dr. Niyaz Kasravi, who's going to be a keynote speaker. And if you couldn't make it on the December 8th, please go to amorebalancedworld.org, and you can offer your support to this wonderful organization for this new and upcoming project that it is for the homeless youth of Los Angeles area. Your last words, Mandy John, for people to hear you and to say how they can support you.
Well, the best way, Fujian, would be tomorrow is called Giving Tuesday. We will have a fundraiser on Facebook, so will hundreds of other nonprofits. The first couple of hours when it starts at 5 a.m. in the morning is crucial because Facebook and PayPal will match up to $7 million in donation to nonprofits.
Wow.
So I want to ask your listeners to kindly, if they like, to go on Facebook, look us up on a More Balanced World page, and donate and double their impact on what we are doing.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being on the show. So everyone go to Facebook and go to a More Balanced World and donate tomorrow, so that your every dollar you donate is going to be doubled. So you're going to have a higher impact tomorrow. Thank you so much, Mandy, for being on our show. And hopefully you will, the new program that you have is going to be just amazing. I will definitely give you my support and all that I can. You know that, especially bringing the awareness integration model to your youth.
Thank you so much. I hope to come back on your show and tell you about all the good things that we will be doing at that center.
Love to. Thank you for all of you for being with us. Until next week, create an amazing world for yourself. Bye-bye.